Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about what worked, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. Because ultimately, I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so one of the topics I talk about is, what does this look like in a changing world, especially one around AI? It's the topic of my last book, The AI Roadmap, and it's the topic of today's episode. But before we get started, I want to share something with you briefly. I would love if you would consider subscribing to my YouTube channel. One of the best ways for people to find my videos, for things to rise to the top, is to get page views, interactions in the comments, but also subscribers. So if you love this podcast, I think you would enjoy the video content. It's a lot shorter than the podcast. It's a lot more visual. It's a lot of sketch videos that I make. In fact, I reference a sketch video today in my podcast episode. So go check it out. If you go to spencervideos.com, that'll take you to that YouTube channel. And I would love to have you check that out. So without further ado, let's dive into this week's topic of why AI will not replace teachers. A few weeks ago, I watched a cringeworthy Apple commercial. Like many viewers, I had a visceral reaction to the message because it seemed to create this false dichotomy between the digital and the physical, the technological and the human, the compressed and the expansive. I immediately sat down and sketched out a video, and yes, I used my trusty MacBook. I am a bit of an Apple fanboy. To turn it into a video. You can check it out again on spencervideos.com. Now, if you're not familiar with the Apple commercial, I want you to imagine this. There's this house full, or maybe a room, full of colorful, vibrant, idiosyncratic objects that are then crushed by this giant industrial machine. The iPad lives. Of course it does. It's so thin, so compressed, so sexy, so skinny. It's also breakable. Drop it down a set of stairs and you have a spider-webbed screen, but we're not gonna talk about that. In fact, I have some personal experience with cracked screens. But the message was clear. Why bother with the clunky, the human, the messy, the colorful, the vibrant? Just opt for an iPad. Why strum your fingers on an acoustic guitar, learning the chord progression to Stairway to Heaven, like your father did, and maybe your grandpa, if you're young enough? After all, with an iPad, you have GarageBand. Why spend hours playing Space Invaders with your friend at the arcade, if the App Store can get it to you much cheaper and faster, and you can take that anywhere? Why embrace the memory of emptying your spit valve in the marching band as you look up, embarrassed at your crush staring back at you? If you could just stare at the likes on your latest social media update. It is so inefficient to hold on to the tangible in this age of automation. And I get it. I love technology. I've been using a Mac since my childhood. I have a vast experience of getting dysentery on the Oregon Trail. And currently the Apple ecosystem is how I do a lot of my creative work. I make videos, podcasts, books. It's how I make my keynote slides for the keynotes that I do. I use the Apple ecosystem often. And yet, we have this grand piano in our living room. It takes up far too much space and is filled with far too many memories. It needs a tune-up and not an update. And a man, a very old man, fiddles around for hours and then he makes it feel timeless. But I'm telling you, when someone pounds on those keys, I swear I can hear entire generations before me. And I'm transported to a moment where I can hear my wife's grandma playing her favorite hymns. It's a sacred object, and it's one that I would never want to crush. The most powerful iPad ever, I'm not looking for power. The thinnest iPad ever, I don't want more compression in my life. Give me a can of spray paint so that my son Micah can make art in the garage, and maybe we can do it together sometimes. Give me an acoustic guitar, and I can see if I can play New Kid in Town and feel the memories of my dad singing that song to me while I fell asleep in my childhood. Give me a whole truckload of hardback books covered with annotations that are passports to all kinds of worlds. Forget compression. I want duct tape. I want cardboard. I want a makerspace filled with physical stuff. I want an acoustic guitar next to a campfire while I have another IPA. Life is short. We don't need to compress it more than it already is. And I think for me, the biggest bottom line is this. In a world of automation, I don't want to crush creativity. Of course, we should enjoy our tech. It's amazing. It is, and I love it. But also, let's embrace the lo-fi, the vintage, the tangible, the messy, the human. And I share this because I keep seeing a message that AI will spark all kinds of amazing innovations in education. But I worry that if we center the innovation on machine learning, we run the risk of chasing the fleeting novelty of techno-futurism instead of preparing students for the deeply human skills that they will need in a changing world. And so for a moment, I want to think about this false promise of techno-futurism. When I was in middle school, a teacher brought us all to the front of the class and held up this giant golden disc. "This is the future of education," he said. "Someday you will be able to pick up one of these laser discs would be cool. I would love to have a desk that shoots laser. I'll just say that. That would be awesome. But his whole idea is that you could take one of these discs, put it in a pod with a TV, and learn on demand. You could get exactly what you need. And I remember he said these words, "You won't even need teachers. This will change learning forever." Well, it did not change learning forever. Years later, I have seen the same argument reemerge with the rise of the internet and search engines. That was going to change learning forever. That was going to replace teachers. We wouldn't need teachers to be a source of knowledge, all that kind of stuff. We could just ask Jeeves and he'd answer all our questions. Rest in peace, Jeeves. Later, it was one-to-one devices and then leveled reading programs for intervention. And now it's the promise of personalized learning through generative AI. Just have students sit in front of a computer with an AI tutor and receive the exact instruction they need without the guidance of a teacher. And that is the promise. We won't need the human. We won't need the messy. And so I think about that, and I created this video called Why AI Won't Replace Teachers. And I made the distinction in this video between what I call adaptive learning, which is programmed AI learning, versus personalized learning, which is human-driven, dynamic, messy, and very idiosyncratic. It's the difference between giving someone choices and giving someone autonomy, right? If you have choices, if I make a decision based on being given a choice, right? On the other hand, autonomy is all about making my own decisions by generating the choices themselves, coming up with my own ideas. And so I made this distinction and I created this video. And it's interesting that after I posted the video, I began to see angry comments on my YouTube channel. Some of these were polite, right? So someone said, "Yeah, you need to revisit this claim. I have heard heads of AI companies even suggest that education and healthcare are the largest impacted industries, and I get it, right? He went on to say, imagine individualized teachers for students on a computer. That's the goal. But others were far less kind. Here's an example of what someone said. I think you have an extremely idealized view of teachers, to be honest. Most teachers I've had were terrible and put me off the subject. The only reason they were necessary to me before was because if I tried teaching myself a subject by reading and researching, I'd always have questions. And then he goes on to say, basically, now I can ask AI for the questions. Teachers are completely irrelevant. One person even said, this video is just pure cope. Someone even said, eventually AI will replace teachers. Teaching is becoming a dead career. And it goes on and on and on. Now, I understand. I get it. These are flaming rants from strangers in the YouTube comment section. That's what you get on YouTube. But dig underneath a little bit, and you'll see there's this underlying message that education is merely content delivery. Teachers deliver the content, give feedback on the mistakes through their assessment, and then they reteach it. So it's this content delivery method. And you even hear that with some of the languages that we use in education. When someone says, my students didn't get it, or how did that person deliver the lesson? It's a content delivery model and metaphor. And if that's the model of learning, then yeah, AI might eventually do a lot of those things better than humans. If teaching is merely a set of instructions, worksheets, digital or otherwise, and feedback loops, then of course, AI is going to surpass humans in certain domains. But I actually don't think that that's what teaching and learning is all about. The future of learning is not merely about acquiring a predetermined set of knowledge and then being tested on it. Instead, it's about learning skills, concepts, and mindsets that will help students in an unpredictable world. So if we think about it this way, we want students to gain the skills that they'll need in this unpredictable world while also mastering the content. And I think it's important to understand why from a very practical standpoint. For years, students learned this message, and I grew up hearing it, work hard at school, graduate from university, and then go climb the corporate ladder. But the truth is, with automation and AI, the corporate ladder is gone, and now we have a maze. And our students will need to navigate this unpredictable world. They will need to navigate the maze. The bad news is the rules have changed. The exciting news is that our students will rewrite those rules. And so what do they need in order to navigate this unpredictable world? Well, they need to be creative thinkers. They need to be problem solvers. They need to be communicators. They need to be adaptable. If you ask yourself the question, what does it mean that the ladder has become a maze? It would seem that worksheet style learning is not going to be the solution. So given this new reality, we want students, again, to learn the content at a deep level while also developing those skills that they'll need, those creative thinking skills to navigate the maze. There are no simple answers, but there are strategies that we can use that help them learn the content well in order to gain the skills at the same time to navigate an unpredictable world. One example is PBL. You've probably heard me talk about PBL if you've been listening to this podcast at all. I'm a huge fan of it. I've done PD on it. I talk about it. It's my dominant style of teaching when I taught K-12. It's something I try to incorporate into my college courses as well. Project-based learning is mostly, if you can think about it, you are learning through the project. So that's a key component. It is the notion not of doing a culminating project, but learning the content through a project. And when students engage in PBL, they gain those critical thinking skills, those creative skills that they will need in order to navigate the maze. And I'm a huge fan of combining project-based learning with design thinking. I call it PBL by design. And I have, a sketch video. You can look at the blog post at spencerauthor.com. You can look at the videos at spencervideos.com. And you'll see a blog post where I talk about why design thinking is the creative framework and PBL is the pedagogical framework. Now, if that's too challenging, if time is there's too much of a time crunch, then I personally think that doing design sprints and mini projects work really well and help students gain those same skills, even if they're not necessarily able to do the full project. Another option is inquiry-based learning. Again, you have to make sure that they have the background knowledge. There's nothing wrong with doing direct instruction ahead of time, front-loading the vocabulary. But if you can't do inquiry-based learning, I love just doing short question breaks where they ask questions, they do a rally robin where they share their answers with each other, they do a stand-up, hand-up, pair-up where they walk around answering each other's questions, and then together you answer their questions as a whole. Another option that I think really helps them develop those critical thinking skills where they will navigate the maze is a Socratic seminar. If you think about it this way, the maze is not just individual, it is collaborative, right? So it sounds scary to navigate this maze of an unpredictable world, but you are not alone in the maze. And so learning how to think critically, how to engage with others, how to communicate, you can learn all of those things while thinking deeply about the subject by running a Socratic seminar. So that's another example. And there's so many more options out there. So I want to point out that all of these options are centered on human interaction. They are messy, they are unpredictable, and they contrast sharply with the efficiency of a lone student sitting in front of a computer with headphones on, doing predetermined adaptable learning programs. But I want to also point out that there is a time and a place to use AI within these projects, within these assignments, within these activities. And so the best creators are going to be the ones who know how to take a blended approach that is centered on the human experience but embraces artificial intelligence. And I think that requires us to ask, what does AI do well and what do humans do well? Now, if you want to take a deeper dive into how to use AI in some of these domains, I will point out there's past episodes that dealt with things like how to use AI for scaffolds and supports, how to use AI in project-based learning. You can go back to the archives and you can find some of those episodes if you want to take a deeper dive into that. But what does AI do well? Let's start there. It is great at synthesizing information, generating examples, role-playing, creating systems, using predictive analytics, analyzing problems, help with conceptual understanding. Those are all things that it is great at. So we need to embrace those areas that AI does well. And there's nothing wrong with embracing those areas. However, it is really important that we don't let AI do all of that work, because we want to avoid something called cognitive atrophy. And that's sort of like the way that a muscle will atrophy if you don't use it. Cognitive atrophy is the notion that what can happen is if we fail to engage in that thinking, we lose the ability to think a certain way and it becomes much more challenging. A lot of us experience cognitive atrophy, for example, with maps. We have sort of lost our spatial thinking a little bit with our reliance on the technology. That would be an example of it. An example that we don't even think about in our culture, but it's true, is we are much worse than our ancestors were at memorization because we have used the technology of print media to do a lot of the heavy lifting for us. So I think it's really important that we say, you know, these are the things that AI does well. But also, it's important that we recognize that AI is not intelligent. A chatbot isn't sentient. It's not affective. It will do no thinking without a prompt. When I leave the room, the chatbot is not daydreaming or making plans. It's not feeling super insecure about that awkward interaction it had with a colleague or a friend yesterday. A chatbot feels no shame, has no hopes, and experiences no loss. It can generate a love poem, but it can't be heartbroken. And so these are major aspects of human cognition, and that's why it's important that we ask, what do humans do well? And so I think there are actually four different areas. So I'm going to share these briefly. Number one is context. AI lacks contextual knowledge. It's a bit like interacting with a toddler who has this encyclopedic knowledge of the world, but has never left the room. And on a basic level, generative AI has difficulty in maintaining coherence over extended interactions or fully grasping the subtleties and complexities of situational nuances. So you end up with errors and inappropriate responses and things that are sometimes not very culturally responsive. And it's because chatbots don't understand the heated debates in your local school board or the institutional knowledge that your veteran colleague has. It doesn't know the sheer number of cultural values present in a classroom community. It just doesn't have that. And so that's why it's really important that we recognize that we are the experts on context as educators. And more importantly, there's a lot of contextual expertise in our classroom among our students. And we need to humbly lean into some of their contextual knowledge about the neighborhood, about their culture, about the background. And that becomes especially true in things like project-based learning, where it is deeply rooted in authenticity and context. But it's also true of things like class discussions, Socratic seminars, all of those things. So that's number one, context. Number two is divergent thinking. Humans tend to be better than AI at divergent thinking, and there's a key reason why. And it's because AI is built on something called probabilistic thinking. So humans think abstractly. We draw on personal experiences. We incorporate emotional and cultural nuances into our decision making, and in other words, the context that I just mentioned. And this allows us to generate unique ideas and solutions that are often unexpected and innovative. In other words, we are divergent thinkers. By contrast, AI typically follows programmed patterns and lacks the ability to truly innovate beyond its training data. This is a bit simplistic, but AI tends to generate things that are vanilla and predictable, and they're more derivative. So again, the goal is to take that vanilla of the AI-generated work. It might be a leveled reader that you've created using AI. It might be scaffolds and supports. Whatever it may be, the project ideas, whatever it may be that you're using AI for, and then take that vanilla and make it interesting, make it more creative. And really what you're doing is you're using the AI to be a box so that you can think inside the box to be more innovative. You can embrace that creative constraint. You can do what George Koros describes as innovate inside the box. And so divergent thinking is something that we can do in our classrooms as teachers, but it's also something that we can encourage our students to do. We can do divergent thinking challenges. We can bring in creative constraint. And all of this will help our students navigate this maze. That brings us to the third idea of curiosity. On the surface level, a chatbot might seem like it's curious. I mean, it can generate amazing questions. But human curiosity is different. Curiosity involves a desire to learn more, driven by this emotional and cognitive process that AI just doesn't possess. It's almost like an itch that we need to scratch. It's something innate in our humanity, and honestly, something that many animals have as well. It just nags at you, and you have to figure it out. I can tell you right now, my dog, well, actually, one of my dogs is very curious, and she has gotten into some trouble by simply being curious. Ravens will be curious just for the sake of curiosity, not necessarily for a survival piece. And we are the same way. But AI doesn't operate that way. AI operates based on algorithms and data patterns, responding to inputs with its own outputs, trained from vast data sets. In other words, AI just simply does not get curious. Machine learning lacks self-awareness, and curiosity is rooted in self-awareness. AI is incapable of the intrinsic motivation that fuels human curiosity. AI experiences no joy when it finds an answer and no mild anxiety when an answer is elusive. And I think it's important to understand that AI is a large language model. It's based on learning language, but not really learning it, right? It's probabilistic thinking, it's algorithms. By contrast, babies and toddlers are curious before they have even mastered language. So I think that's really important to understand, that curiosity is deeply human. And if we want students to embrace wonder and curiosity, that requires a human, a teacher, to be a part of the process. And finally, empathy. One of the aspects rarely mentioned in our conversations about AI is just how often it fails to read the room with a person. An AI tutor might be pleasant and incredibly patient in a way that teachers sometimes aren't. I know I have lost my patience with students before. But actually, we need humans in order to be more empathetic. If we think about the role of scaffolds for exceptional learners or for multilingual students, teachers are the ones who know their students best because they've developed empathy. And so they can take that vanilla of the prompts and the scaffolds and supports they've created, and then they can modify it and make it their own. Also, I think teachers have this ability to speak truth and wisdom into students' lives in a way that an AI simply will not be able to do. If you ask anyone about their favorite teacher, there's often a story that barely tiptoes on academics. For me, it was my teacher, Mrs. Smoot, who said, "When you hide your voice, you rob the world of your creativity, and I'm not gonna let you do that." For my son, it was a teacher who said, "You have an eye for design. You are an artist, Micah." I know countless people who have stories of a teacher who sat down and listened to them as they opened up about a family tragedy, or who saw something in them that nobody else could see. I think the bottom line is this: our humanity, as imperfect as it may be, is a gift to our students. In an age of AI, our students still need a human to listen and empathize, to experiment and adapt, to make mistakes and apologize. They will need a guide who can build a relationship with them and get to know them as a person and help them navigate this complex world. So what does this mean? Where do we go from here if we know the teachers are more vital than ever? Well, some of it is this. We can think through the human element. I, on the blog post that corresponds to this blog post, have a strategy that I love, and it's basically rewriting your writing prompts to do a little bit of a diagnostic tool where you say, how can I add more context, divergent thinking, curiosity, empathy, and then give each other feedback on the process. And I've really enjoyed that process. It's something I've done in the workshops I've led. And I personally just find it really valuable. It also means remembering the human element and just centering it on what does it mean to be human in this unpredictable world. Because ultimately, teachers are the future of learning. Earlier, I mentioned the authentic and meaningful learning that students will need to navigate that unpredictable future. Whether it's project-based learning or a class discussion, it is the teacher, as the artist and the problem solver and the curator, who sparks innovation. The future of education can't be found in a gadget or an app or a program or a product. It doesn't require a think tank full of pundits. The future of education can be found in your classroom. Your classroom is packed with creative potential. You have all the innovation you need right there in your room. It's what happens every time you experiment, take risks. It's what happens when you empower your students with voice and choice. It's what happens when you abandon the scripted curriculum and take your students off-road in their learning. Sometimes it's messy and even confusing. It often looks humble. But I think it's important that we remember this. Every time your students get the chance to be authors and filmmakers, scientists, artists, engineers, you are planting the seeds for a future that you can never imagine on your own. And that right there is the beauty of creative classrooms. That's the power of innovative teachers. And that's why in the end, the future of education will not be found through AI. It is found through you. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you get your podcast, Spotify, whatever it may be, and maybe tell a friend about this podcast as well. So again, subscribe, review, that would mean the world to me. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.